views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, Monday's October 17th. And it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. And once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for today. As today, we speak to some interesting people. Mind you, when I saw them as I was walking to the mall, I got excited. I got so excited and I started begging and pleading, saying, you know, when you see Michael Jackson and you start the tears come down your eyes? I had one of those moments where I felt something. But I'm going to tell you something first because I want to know how this encounter happened. But I want to read something to you that I posted on my Facebook page. My Facebook page. And so you got to understand exactly who I'm speaking with. And I'm just waiting on my page to come back up because it went down. Or I have just doodled a memory. And there is the deafening silence on radio. Anyway, I shall go on memory because everything went down on my page. I know I'm good. Okay. So Saturday. So I was in the mall with my African self, and lo and behold, I met two indigenous people of the Caribbean. What's the pronunciation now? Kalinagos. I got it good, right? Also known as Caribs. When the conqueror, the invader, the enslaver, the destroyer of worlds came to the Americas in his three warships, the Kalinagos of St. Vincent defended their island home with vigor and might. Because of their valiant efforts, Columbus described them as cannibals and warlike. And continuing, these two Carib, in quotes, ladies, women, are from the island of St. Vincent, one of the last bastion of defense of the Lesser Antilles against the Columbus invasion. And they are here basically to witness and experience the Bahamas AWAC exhibition. That's the newest exhibition at the Pompey Museum. And I'm going to be basically interviewing how they get here to the Bahamas to see this exhibition. And before I introduce formally those beautiful ladies who are here, and for lack of better words, I know you can correct me because I know that from experience that you don't associate with the term Carib anymore. Right? Even though we in the Bahamas know you as the Carib because we study our Lucayan past and we have been indoctrinated by Europeans and for some reason it's hard for us to transition, but we are learning and we're getting better at it. But I have Christopher Davis, who is a historian here who works out of the Pompey Museum, who is actually responsible for inviting them here to the Bahamas. And I want to know that narrative on how we got the privilege of having some Kalinagos, I pronounce it right twice now, right? To come to the Bahamas, right? And to be here at this crucial time, which is October 12th movement, and also at the opening of our exhibition, was covering some world-renowned reviews right now. So go ahead, Christopher, explain how you get to invite them.
Yes, good morning, Bahamas. As many may know, you know, I've been doing a lot of seminal research on the origins of Junkanoo, our predominant national festival. And a lot of my research takes me in how actually the entire African diaspora in the West are somewhat familiar with this terminology that we call Junkanoo with all the different variations. And so the Kalinago are very closely linked to us. And as we know now that Junkanoo, the man that we know as Junkanoo, was an Ahanta general. And as they were fighting against colonization and enslavement in West Africa, at the same time as the Kalinago was fighting against colonization and enslavement in what would become the Caribbean, right? And so essentially, in a nutshell, these Kalinago people are actually the people that provided refuge for many people, particularly from the Gold Coast, particularly our Ahanta people, right? And so when they gave refuge to these Ahanta people who, like the Kalinago, for some reason, refused enslavement. And for context, these Ahanta people are the people that gave us Junkanoo. The man that we know as Junkanoo was a general from the Ahanta people, the Safahini, if you will, right? In the Twi word. Now, essentially, if anybody studies John Canoe a little bit, and even when you Google it, you will see it popping up from various countries. And one of those countries is Belize. But in my research, I've also traced it to Honduras, going all the way to southern Mexico. And these people, of course, are now known as the Garifuna, who, likes very similarly to the Seminoles, you know, they did not essentially exist before colonization, but they became this kind of new community as Africans, a significant portion of whom would have been a hunter, mixed in and got refuge from these Kalinago people who have been fighting throughout the Las Antilles against the British, specifically for centuries. And of course, this is how this John Canoe celebration exists in St. Vincent throughout the Las Antilles. And when the British finally was able to subjugate the majority of them in 1795, if I'm correct, they took the vast majority of them first to Jamaica and then to British Honduras, which is today Belize. And this is how John Canoe came to Belize. However, my sisters here are descended from some of those that were left behind, you know, and they are some of the original Kalinago of St. Vincent. And of course, the indigenous plight in the Bahamas is often lost on us because our indigenous population, as far as we know, had gone extinct. However, we still have a lot of indigenous blood within us through the migrations that happened throughout our history. Well, me in particular, my mother is from Trinidad, and myself, I have Kalinago blood. But in Trinidad, they still, unfortunately, use the misnomer, generally speaking, Carib. But of course, we're trying to change all that. And I've learned so much from the two sisters since they've been here. And it's greatly changed my perspective, not only on John Canoe, but on Caribbean and African culture and indigenous culture on the whole.
And and before I reach my guest, because now I'm eager to have some conversation with you both, right? How important it is for Bahamians to have a connection with indigenous people of the Caribbean, like the, we call the Garifuna.
Well, the Garifuna.
Garifuna, and of course, the Kalinago.
The Kalinago, and there are many others as well, right? Well, first of all, you know, it's a cultural thing, and it's a commemorative thing of the Lucayans. So we know that the Lucayans were the first to encounter Columbus and all the conquistadors that followed, you know, that their contact was the first contact. And so that in itself is very significant for the entire indigenous diaspora and for all Homo sapiens, as a matter of fact. Secondly, again, many of us, though it's unacknowledged, and I've even done research for certain families where, because they may be a little of a lighter hue or the hair might be straight, it's automatically assumed that the mixture is with European. But what we're finding out now, and it's all, the clues are all over the Bahamas. You know, you get Cherokee Sound, Abaco. You get the well-known Red Bays in North Andres. You even get Yamacraw, where we've actually visited yesterday as well, in the southeast. All of these were actually indigenous American communities that were established.
And but mostly North American and not necessarily a South American connection.
But then you would have also had it coming from the Caribbean. So people from Jamaica, the Las Antilles, places like Barbados and Trinidad, because I got my Kalinago heritage through my Trinidadian mother. So that is another way that it would have happened. And then, you know, throughout our history, particularly when, during the colonial period, when we would have the big exchange of professionals and police officers and nurses and teachers, and we have specific names like Giddings that we know come from Barbados during the police migrations and stuff. So that is how much of that would have happened. Of course, as I mentioned before, as far as we know, our indigenous, even down to the DNA, our indigenous population of the Bahamas, the Lucayans, the Lucacari, are extinct as far as we know. However, that indigenous presence is still strong throughout us. And especially as you delve into African history and you realize the level of commonality where you saw Africans merging with indigenous American cultures. And then thirdly, you know, we eat conch. We do all of these things. Conch wasn't eaten in Africa as far as I know. And when we came over here, you know, we not only learned about things like eating conch, but we learned about their plants. We were able to supplant things that were taken away from us in Africa and replace them with things in the Americas.
Like cassava potato. And peppers.
Right. And these things are staples throughout the Caribbean, throughout the African diaspora that reside.
Because that gold pepper is important to us. Exactly. I appreciate you all for giving us gold pepper. You know?
And again, these indigenous cultures You know, they invented things like these starchy foods like cassava, potato. You know, these are things similar to Africa, how the African women invented things like wheat and barley, things that we take for granted, things that are the foundation of humans being able to feed themselves to allow us to be able to sit here and have these conversations. Because other than that, we got to go find food to eat for the next meal, feed your children and all of that, you know. So it's extremely important, and I don't even think it could be expressed in words how important it is, just as it is for any people to know their history and their heritage. And though it may seem far removed, again, because our Lucayans are gone, it is not far removed at all from Bahamians. And particularly even through like the Loyalist migrations, you see a very, very high indigenous American mixed even in with many of the people that would have come over on both sides of the spectrum, slave master and those at risk of being enslaved.
I always thought that it was incumbent of our government to invite indigenous people to migrate to the Bahamas because how important they are to our narrative, right? Being the gateway to the Caribbean, being the gateway to the New World, that we should have one or two representatives because we are a diverse community. We have every nation here.
Right.
But I cannot say and say out loud, say, yes, we have a small segment of our society that is Kalinago, Bronx Red again, right? Or Tainos or anything. And I said, we should make an extra effort for our general narrative. And I'm still pushing that issue. Hopefully someone listens and say, okay, let's see if they want to come to one of our universities, you know, give some scholarships and opportunities that we both would some kind of mutual benefit. But let's go to our guests. I would need you to introduce yourself, right? And I want to understand Kalinago life in St. Vincent. And I mind you, I'm going to interject and give a narrative. And let me do that first, right? Columbus described you as warlike. Columbus said that you were cannibals, that in contrast to the Lucayans, who were peaceful and loving, don't know anything about weapons or anything, that they came to the Lesser Antilles and they saw some warlike people who fought back. And then they tell the New World, these people wicked. don't come down here. We need to conquer these set. Because these set have nothing good about them. They are warlike and they eat people. They shrink their heads. And I know that the narrative is purposefully done. Later on, we found that the Kalinago never ate people.
Right.
That was all made up in order to... what the gentleman who wrote Boy Columbus? The one who built the statue?
Washington Irving.
Irving. He created an entire narrative to promote Columbus to say that he was a hero and that none of that was true. And I want to now understand the Kalinago or the Caribs in St. Vincent, because I didn't know they were St. Vincent. I know they're in Dominica. I went to Dominica and saw some Caribs there. I went to was that Guyana and saw some Caribs. I mean, they weren't Caribs, but they were some kind of Native American type groups. And when you said you were from St. Vincent, I got excited, you know. Then to hear that you were the ones Columbus were talking about when you said that who were fighting like crazy. You all are warriors. You know, so I want to know about that warrior spirit that you all have. That's a lot. Sorry, forgive me.
Good morning, Bahamas. I am Hedy Osmond, and yes, of course, from I like to use our real indigenous name, Hairuna.
Hairuna.
Yes, instead of St. Vincent. St. Vincent was given us by the French.
Ah.
So Hairuna is our real
island
indigenous
name.
Yes.
Okay. Hairuna.
Yes, which means beautiful rainbow. So, okay, I totally disagree with Columbus. If you have come to someone's island to invade, you brought all your social outcasts.
Mm-hmm.
You brought your murderers, your rapists, your prostitutes. You came to basically kill us.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we have to fight and protect our freedom and our liberty.
Mm-hmm.
So because we fought... Our ancestors fought against being colonized and being oppressed. I didn't think they had the foresight that we would be like that.
Mm-hmm.
So
especially coming across the Lucayans, okay, no, and he said these people are easily conquered. You know, we would put them enslaved. That was a narrative they gave for the Lucayans. Then to come across you all,
yeah, so
you're different.
They couldn't enslave us, of course, because we love our freedom. We love our liberty.
And
we're not going to give that up to you because you come and say, well, okay, you think you can control us. No, why should we? You came to our land. You came to our shores.
Watch me bait you. I'm going to go to my next guest. Introduce yourself. I'm going to get, excuse me. Okay. Y'all are short people. I don't know how y'all could say I can fight against these large Europeans, and y'all done grow. You know, y'all were 5'2", 5'3". You know, I want to understand that. What was the thinking of your ancestors, I think, right? Why you think there was a need for you to fight back?
Good morning, Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I'm honored to be here. My name is Denise Osmond. And to answer that question, the need, and basically we were ready. That's the thing. We were ready for Columbus and the colonizers, because you remember, we were the last island to be colonized. Mm-hmm. So we were already fighting the colonizers way before. So
I don't think people even appreciate it. And I didn't want to inject there. You were the last island
to be colonized.
Because of your warlike features and whatever it is.
What you have to remember, we were fighting across the Lesser Antilles. So when they were...
Into the Americas.
When Columbus hit here and they were fighting against the Ilocanos, we, the Kalinagos, were leaving St. Vincent.
To come and fight with y'all.
What? And we would, yes.
We were known to have...
We were the
best canoes.
Yes.
In the Lesser Antilles, 60-man canoes where we would... From St. Vincent, go all the way up to the Orinoco.
Orinoco, we get reinforcement and we come back. We go to St. Kitts, we go to Dominica, we go to Barbados, we go to Martinique, we go everywhere to fight against the colonists. That meaning the Dutch, the French, and the Spanish, and then the English.
But exactly. Christopher, they don't tell us that in our narrative.
No, they don't.
That they had a base. Mm-hmm. That the Kalinagos had a base in St. Vincent where they launched an attack against the Europeans in terms of anti-colonists. That's impressive. I mean, I did not know.
So we were like the elite forces of the Caribbean.
The elite, and at the same United time, Nations.
We were the refugee camp for as you call them, stolen people when they escaped from Barbados, Jamaica, and all those places. They came to St. Vincent for refuge because they know we would protect them. So, and we did protect them.
We were even asked to enslave you guys and hand you guys over.
To the colonists.
Really?
The colonists.
That's typical European. Yeah. They do that a lot.
So what we did,
we didn't.
We set up a new community called the Garifunas.
We integrate them into
So the Garifunas are...
Yeah, just going to say, what is a Garifuna so I can understand that?
Descendants of the Kalinagos. Mm-hmm. So the Kalinago mixture along with Africa.
Ah, and they call, and that's a special group called
the Garifuna.
That's
and
awesome.
And those people were shipwrecked, the same who escaped from the Hunter people from Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana, Benin, Ecuador, and different places of the
That's a myth, too, with regards to when the Garifuna came about. So a lot of it is, when the slave ships came to our waters. We were dealing with Africans way before.
What do you mean you were dealing with Africans way before?
We were trading.
We were trading with Africa way before.
What do you mean you've been trading with Africa way before? Africans came to the New World through slavery, right?
No.
You see
the mix up. Because I study European history, and they tell me we came here to the Bahamas and to the New World and to the Americas via slavery.
No.
And you saying that part of your culture, part of your narrative, part of your history, you have it that your grouping were exchanging, trading with Africans years before 1492 when Columbus the invader, the killer and the conqueror came to the Bahamas.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying?
Yes. Yeah.
And Columbus himself, in specific areas throughout the Caribbean and Central America and North, South America, said that he saw African
people. Yes, I remember he said he saw African, or people who looked African.
No, and in some cases, they distinctly, you know, there was some of them, there was unmistakable, I believe. It was Panama on the third or fourth voyage, where he saw these very, very, very tall jet black people who he believed would have been Wolofs from Senegal. And, you know, they have a very distinct look. And then, of course, there are reports of him finding golden tip spears. Can't remember where it was. But it was in the Lesser Antilles where he found these golden tip spears, took them to the Aseo in Spain, the Aseo being the person that deals with metal, breaking it down, and those perfectly matched the golden tip spears that were coming out of, I guess, what they would have called the Windward Coast at the time, right? And if Columbus came there and meet it there, whether it was the Africans coming that way or the indigenous Americans going the other way, You know, and then of course you found evidence of Africans with things like maize and corn in their diets, you know, in their DNA.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So of course they like to focus on, I would say, the weaker archaeological evidence. But if you have communities of people being found in their DNA having eaten food that originates in the Americas.
In Americas.
You know, it's no denying that there was some kind of contact. Trade and some level of contact.
I see I have a caller already, and producer pastor caller True. How you doing, caller?
Blessed, good morning, Mrs. Nuri.
How you doing?
It's such a pleasure to have these young people to speak this history. Because I had a problem with this growing up as a youngster when it came to history. We were brainwashed so much by the European way of telling the story that we were almost afraid to ask questions. For example, let me ask you something. Even in the Bible, there was a time in the young boy's Jesus' life when he was 12 years old, when he was missing from his father and mother when they were going back to Jerusalem, their hometown, after paying taxes. They went back and they went into the temple and they found the young man questioning the high priest and so forth. You remember that story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mike, go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And then the high priest said, "Lady, what manner of child is this?"
Yes.
He was so intelligent at asking questions rather than just taking what people was telling him. They couldn't follow him. But the story, what I'm trying to find out, after the age of 12, the next time you heard of Jesus, he was coming out of the wilderness, tempted by the devil for 40 days, 40 nights, to be baptized by his cousin John the Baptist. Now, the question is, where was he those 18 missing years? Remember, between 12 and 30? 18 missing years. You know what they didn't tell us? You know, they used to move around with those caravans and go different places all over the world? And those Arabian caravans and stuff, on camels and so forth. People traveled, you know. They just wasn't born and then they died, the way people told us. If you look at the people up in Alaska and look at the people down in Peru, what we call the original Indians, what do you call the Eskimos in Alaska?
Right.
Look at the people down in Peru and Brazil and stuff, the indigenous ones. Don't they look alike?
Exactly.
You don't think that they travel from Alaska south or from south north? And they when Columbus came to the west, he met people here. He didn't discover anything.
Exactly.
He just went back with the news to Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand. And all the gold with the queen driving in a carriage now. They had no gold in England. Those are golds and diamonds and stuff that they stole and plundered with the French and the Spanish pirates and so forth. And they took it back to England, a $40 billion carriage made of solid gold that she drive around it. I don't want to pay the Africans and so all what they owe and stole from their countries. And now they die, saying they die living to be trillionaires, and we go into our house of assembly that we're going to honor the kings and queens and their heirs and successors.
Yes, sir.
And all of them have stealing from us for a lifetime in history.
And I appreciate that, Sparky. And I have another caller there because everything you said makes sense. But producer, Patrick, the other caller for me, please. Oh, did you hang up already? No problem. But I have a comment that someone is actually sending to you. I know you as a resident historian here. So the Moors were in the New World from 1350s, trading with the Caribbean. Bahamians don't know nothing about standing for something. We could learn a thing or two from the Kalinagos. We were doormats back then, and now doormat for politicians. Sound like one of those COI people. No problem with that. Don't worry.
Yeah, right.
But my point is, and quickly, what we were talking about was more West Africans coming to the New World.
Right.
And I see this text was mentioned in the Moors, which would more likely be Arabs and North Africans.
Yeah, it was West Africans, North Africans, Arabs, Christians, Muslims within that. Moors is a very broad term.
Yes.
You understand what I'm saying? But they are actually correct. The evidence is there from the 30s and 50s. The man who was known as the richest person that's ever lived, Mansa Musa, it was his uncle, Kankan Musa, a.k.a. Abu Bakr II, that sent out a flotilla of 200 ships to the west. And it was quite controversial in the Kingdom of Mali because everybody was required to take their pilgrimage to Mecca. Mm-hmm. But he decided to send his ships to the west. And then it was said that some of those ships returned with some of the wares, and that is what opened up this Moorish thing. Now, you have, at certain points in Moorish history, you had the Almoravid dynasty. And that was actually when the Moors were at their zenith. In the Almoravid dynasty, the capital was based in present-day Senegal and stretching through Mauritania. You know, so even within the Moors, it's a very complex, broad, long-term, because then you even had certain incidences where the Moorish capital would have been almost in Turkey.
Yes, you know, but that's right. Different reigns, because we're talking from 700 and the Moors, I think it was 1100, exactly. And there's a different type of people all mixed up. Right. And they had Arabs and they moved to Africans and stuff like that.
But, and typically, you know, Moor has now become a term that generally means Islamic West African or Islam. It could be North too, but once they are clearly African and they're Islamic, especially in that time period that you just suggested, they are considered Moors.
Yes. Right. I'm going to go back about St. Vincent, right? And the Kalinagos living there, right? I'm assuming that St. Vincent, the majority of the population is African-based, black people?
Yes.
And I asked you that because I want to know about your community, the Kalinago community. How big, how small, where do you live? How is your interaction with an African or black government? That's a hard question, but I just want to know. No, deep.
Not a hard question.
Okay, go ahead.
I'll let you start.
We haven't got an African government.
No? No. I would assume they're black, no?
No,
he's not black.
Go ahead.
The person in power right now, his background is Portuguese.
What?
Yes.
I couldn't believe it. He had a CA.
Okay, go ahead.
Known as a Bakra man. So these are his descendants are...
No, I know what a Bakra is. Because we used to use it here once upon a time. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So that is the person in power.
You're diverse. St. Vincent is a diverse society.
We have African. We have Indian. We have, I call them the Bakra community. Mm-hmm. You know, the left aftermath of the colonists, you know, their heirs. Mm. And then we have the Garifuna and we have the Kalinago.
Nice. It's a complex society.
Yeah, because you have to remember the Kalinagos, we didn't want to be ancestral. Mm-hmm. So what we did, we would go to different islands and marry.
Hence the intermixing from the beginning, right?
Or the indigenous groups.
So we would actually set up marriages on other islands.
They would have brought in wives. Mothers. And yes, because I remember that being part of our history too. And how is your community in terms of interacting with other indigenous communities of the Lesser Antilles and Guyana? Is there like an association where you say, Amerindians come together and
no, there's a major dissociation. That's why we're on the mission we are on to interconnect ourselves again. Because that was who we are. That's what we are. Africans, indigenous, we were all connected from the beginning.
Yes,
it's the white man that told us, oh, we didn't know anything about each other. I discovered you. I discovered you. Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm.
So we need to
break that down.
We were already
trading and, you know, intermixing from the beginning of time.
Nice. You know? I'm going to capitalize on that. We're going to take a short break right now and then come back. Because I'm impressed with the story of you leading the charge, going to other islands and other communities to defend this Western Hemisphere against the colonizers. And to know that, and that we in the Bahamas are not aware that your island, St. Vincent, was the base for launching these attacks. That's something we need to know and cherish and celebrate. Your heroes are now our heroes. And because you are our heroes, we must put you on a pedestal and say, hey, the great people of St. Vincent are now a part of us and are a part of our narrative. But we'll be right back. This is Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri, and we're talking with some Kalinagos and, of course, the historian Christopher Davis. Have a wonderful day.
J.S. Johnson Insurance agents are the best. Reliable service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the test. Always, you're always covered me. J.S. Johnson Insurance, peace of mind.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri, and we're talking to some Kalinago. We would know them in the Bahamas as Caribs. Washington Irving described them as warlike, you know. He also described them as cannibals. And we learn in a new narrative, which is completely contrary, because we know Washington Irving was racist, and then he was trying to promote Columbus. And that's how we end up getting the Columbus statue. And some people don't even know the narrative of how we got to the Columbus statue there. And Washington Irving played a role in that, right? And so we're talking with some Kalinagos who we understand now are basically Caribbean heroes, that they led the charge against defending this new world against the colonizers when they came. And I'm trying to get to know exactly how is it to be a Kalinago in St. Vincent, because they have different spots where they live, in Dominica, and I think they have some in some other lesser Antilles. And if you know, my guess, which islands there are tribal relations are, I'd be happy that you can tell me so I can edify my guests, my listening audience. Other than St. Vincent and Dominica, where else can you find Kalinagos?
They're Kalinagos across the whole of their lesser Antilles.
But some of them don't even know it.
Oh, yeah. Because of intermarrying and whatever it is.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, okay. And I want to know if you have a village, or do you have a village chief? Because I know that in Guyana, the Tainos there tend to live independently, their own village, and they have their own chiefs, their own rules. And I want to know, how is it inside some
region? We had that years ago, but now, no.
It's not organized.
But it's not organized. But we do have the village. Our village is still there. It just means we haven't got any chiefs.
So where we live is Sandy Bay. Mm-hmm. So that is, Sandy Bay is the area where the Kalinagos retreated.
Okay.
That's always been, the windward side has always been where the Kalinagos chose to live, and chose to, because of the mountainous range, the land, and it protected us, right?
Yeah, and that's where
that's where we've always lived. That's where all the Kalinagos still live to this day.
And that's where the colonists couldn't get, because that's where we were, element to attack.
And in terms of population, how many Kalinagos in the Sandy Bay?
There's no official record how much we are, but based on our estimates, I would say we're at least 15,000 plus strong.
That's a lot. I mean, and these were what I would say, for lack of a better word, pure-blooded Kalinagos. It was just different from the, pronounce that G word again,
Garifuna.
It was just different from the Garifuna. It was a mixture.
Garifunas live on the leeward side, so that's where they've always lived.
Yes.
The leeward side of the island, that's where they're at, and we're on the windward side.
And in terms of tourism, because everything can base back to tourism, and how is, and this is, feel awkward asking this, how did your country used or embraced your culture in their tourism product?
It's not embraced or used at all. That's why I call us the original ones, the forgotten ones.
Yeah. Imagine if we had our own Lakaian Indians in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
The type of money we would be making. Say, man, here, this your section, your live.
And it's known. It's known. Past the Dry River, they know that's where the Caribs are, the Kalinagos are, our communities.
And no one drive by and say, going to look.
We don't get funding. We don't get anything. We basically get the crumbs of the crumbs at the end of the day.
If any, that is.
If any, there is to give.
Yeah.
Christopher, when I went to Dominica and I realized that they had Caribs there, you know, I canceled all my tours, so I want to go see the Carib. Right. You know what I mean? Because yeah. This is a lifetime. You know, right. I'm not sure. I hear about them in the history books, right?
Right.
They're a part of our history books. But to see a live one, right. to know that they exist, that they thrive, that they're doing well, mm-hmm. that they're still here, mm-hmm. to know that they're still here, was important to me. And to know that you're not celebrated. Everybody says the prophet's not celebrating his own home, right?
Right.
We need to import them here to the Bahamas. You don't want to come live in the Bahamas? You know, we could give you a house and car and then say, man, you all live right here.
Oh, yes.
You
yes.
know? And we drive by
I'm
and
open.
Say,
I'm open to
see
that.
See that house right there? Yeah. That's where the Kalinagos live right there.
I'm definitely open,
I'm open to that.
Yeah, the two ladies in there. Hey, all you got to do is come and wave. Hey, that's us. You know, that's us. That's
yeah,
us.
The sad part is, you know, when you Google Kalinago, that's the first thing you see is Dominica.
Yeah.
Yes.
They have representation. They have funding from their government. They have a territory. They have chiefs. Yeah. We have none of that.
Yeah.
None.
And
that's
the thing
why I say we are forgotten. We are left. You know, even our own Garifuna brothers and sisters don't even recognize us.
And that's for me is very frustrating,
which is sad.
As well. And sad, because you have both. You're
exactly.
of Kalinago and of African, and then you have to understand or even acknowledge and respect that the Kalinagos are the one
mothers.
Who brought you into
yes.
your community and nurture you. We taught you your language, your customs, everything that there is.
There's
and we did not sell you out to the colonists. We fought for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is so amiss in our communities. Like, and again, it comes back to how the colonists used their...
The vice,
exactly. to
divide
and
divide
conquer.
And conquer.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And then we if we say we are awoken, we need to wake up to this,
mm-hmm.
and beginning to embrace and connect again.
And it's sad that even our own Kalinago community don't know how rich their history is.
Good. I'm going to go back to Christopher and then explain how you got them here, and also to explain this Awak, this Lucayan display that you have. At Pompey Museum, I want to hear more of that. But I do have a caller here, and I want to put this caller through. Go ahead, caller.
Well, good morning, CA.
Good morning. How are you doing, Graham?
A special good morning to our friend.
Yes.
You know, it's sad to hear what happened and is happening. But, you know, it gave me a little bit of motivation this morning because I realized someone else is actually being treated the way Bahamians are being treated in their own country. Isn't that sad?
Mm-hmm.
And we do have some traces of the several different types of Indians that were in the Bahamas. Their descendants are still here. If you go to Kern, for example, you have people with long, straight black hair, look like Cher, the singer, and high cheekbones. And that would have been some of the Indians. And you have an Andrus, and I could list them all. How do you think you got Cherokee Sound Abaco? Anyway, moving along.
I always thought they had Haitian blood. That's why they had that high cheekbones.
Well, sometimes we think things and, you know, we don't really research them. I myself have Native American in me.
Of course.
Yeah. Bet you didn't know that.
No, I'm aware of it. The 1600s.
These people
yeah.
call me racist. I just laugh.
Yeah.
William Red Eagle Weatherford.
Yeah, I know.
Google it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we are so rich. We'd love to bring that whole set of people to the Bahamas, give them a home and a car and treat them nice and embrace them. But we need to do the same thing for our people.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's a self-hate for, and I hate to use the term organic Bahamian, but that seems to be the word of the day. There's a self-hate. Just, I assume, I'm hearing from your guests the same sort of thing. When are we going to believe in Bahamians? See, in the middle of believe is lie.
D-E,
lie. D-E. So don't believe anything anyone tells you to believe. We need to get the wealth of this country. It's undisputed. This is the third richest economy in the hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the world coming here. We're not going over the world to be housekeepers and gardeners. No, we're too rich. They're coming here. And so we should recognize this. You see, our politicians could say we're a small country. We're tiny. We're insignificant, CA, and I'll wrap up with this one. Until we say we need to get a grip on human trafficking, and then we're so vast we could never patrol this country.
Oh, okay, thank you very much, Graham. I appreciate that. But I'm now going back to now Christopher now. So because I want to know about the exhibition that you're having at Pompey Museum, right? This is something big that I'm not sure that everyone in the Bahamas, in New Providence, is aware that you're having it, first of all, right? Yeah. And I want to know, how did you get linked up with these ladies, these Kalalanagos, to invite them here? So that's two different questions I want to know.
Well, me and Sister Hattie actually met last year through social media, just through the Junkanoo research that I was doing, because I noticed that they had this Junkanoo thing among this group of people called the Garifuna. And then I found out that they were originally from St. Vincent. And
so the Garifuna has Junkanoo also?
Yes. And this is actually, St. Vincent actually is the root of Junkanoo in Central America. Mm-hmm. You understand? And so, and then I noticed that, okay, you have the Garifuna, but you then have the Kalinago. And as a matter of fact, there were many people out of Central America who actually claimed, and they challenged my research saying that Junkanoo is actually an indigenous American culture and not African. Mm-hmm. You know, and all of that
piqued my interest. I'm sure these African Americans trying to claim our culture. Yeah, anyway.
No, actually, many were from Belize, and these were these, many of them were these Garifuna, mm-hmm. right? And so essentially, that is how we got linked up, because I started the network. I was like, I need someone from St. Vincent, you know what I mean? And another partner of mine found a number, and he's like, hey, you should message her. And the first time we spoke, it was like we knew each other forever. We was feeling each other. And then I heard the revolutionary fervor, and I was like, oh, yes, yeah. Wonderful.
She's one of us.
Yeah, she's one of us, you know what I mean? And then ever since then, we just been in conversation back and forth, just about everything, about the research, asking them questions about their culture. Initially, of course, as it pertained to Junkanoo and stuff, but and then as I got to know them a bit more, you know, it just expounded into this whole thing. And I was like, hold on, they have this whole indigenous American diaspora, indigenous rights thing going on, and there's a whole thing that we're not talking about. And in my opinion, as a matter of fact, particularly when you look at our mixtures and heritage, I think that if any group, it's the indigenous Americans that Africans should show solidarity to. Mm-hmm. And you see something similar that you see with the transatlantic slave trade, where they, of course, place blame on the victims. And you see something similarly in the Western Hemisphere. You know, for example, you have the Cherokee, who were one of the groups, indigenous American groups, who conformed to the colonists in some ways and owned slaves, even mm-hmm. in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. But you also have groups like the Kalinago, who are completely overlooked, and even our very own Lucayans, who fought, did whatever they could, but unfortunately succumbed, you know, to everything. But like Sister Denise say, it's quite simple. They were just ready, mm-hmm. you know. And even when you look to make a parallel with Africa again, there's no coincidence that the same groups that are the most heavily demonized, when you look at their history, they're the same groups that fought the most vigorously mm-hmm. and the most effectively exactly. against the colonizer. And so when it all comes full circle, you know, it almost makes you laugh, because you know if they calling you a cannibal or if they calling you demonic, or that pretty much means, you know, when you see the colonizers speaking about you in this way, mm-hmm. you know, that means that you were one of those people out there on the front lines. And it had absolutely nothing.
That were giving them a run for their money.
Right, mm-hmm. you know. And when we read these, we have to know who's actually writing these things, you know. And we have to remember that belief and behavior are two different things. Mm-hmm. So you may have one side who calling themselves Christian. They saying they love Jesus and they love this and they spreading Christianity and right. rescuing right. the savages. Right. But one side is doing all the killing, the pillaging, the stealing, mm-hmm. the raping, every immoral act under the sun. And the other side are the victims of that. And so as when we look at history, we have to put our own prejudices and biases aside. You know what I mean? And of course, as you know, this is something that is the quintessential example of this would probably be the Haitian Revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so, and all the different stories and myths that come up about Haiti. And, you know, I speak frankly about it, that contributes to our greatest shame, which is our Haitian xenophobia, mm-hmm. you know. And so these things are extremely, extremely important, you know. Like you, CA, you know, I notice you like to talk about the youth and the thing, because some of these people, I feel like once you're over 30, you're a lost cause.
Mm. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Might as well focus on that. And history is the ultimate unifying factor, you know. And through history, you will find ways that we are connected to other people in the most profound ways, you know. And I wasn't expecting, and then it was no coincidence that when the hunter, I should say, arrived here, the same people that brought Junkanoo mm-hmm. to the Western Hemisphere, you know, I could just imagine how those meetings would have went. They was probably looking around and be like, yeah, I like y'all. Yeah, I like y'all too. Y'all
and fighting and coincidentally, the Kalinagos look like they could be African. You know, you might squint your eyes, you know, but you look like a lighter hue or maybe someone up north Africa type thing, you know? So I could see how we would intermarry, intermix, because you're beautiful people. Say, hey, now when I claim a new character in the village, you know, this one right here, you know? So I could understand the trade and understand the intermarrying then. But let's talk about your exhibition happening at Pompeii.
Right, so we recently opened the new Lucayan exhibit. It's actually called The Valor of the Vanquished, right?
That's a profound title, too. I'm not sure people appreciate the title. The title is
The Valor of the Vanquished. And even me, at first, you know, I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great opportunity to talk bad about Columbus and tell him what he really did and all that stuff. But I think that a lot of people are now understanding, even if you don't know in detail, we know that he was no person to celebrate, right? But the focus is actually on Lucayan culture, their way of life. To know, we know, hey, these were real people. These weren't just people in a loincloth who used to eat conch. You know, they had a religion. They had a complex system of governance. They had trade networks that extended all the way down to mainland South America and Central America, of course, and with the Kalinago as well. Their relations.
And I would interject here, because part of the Columbus narrative was that Lucayans were at war. With the Kalinago.
Exactly. We were always at war with each other, according to the Kalinago.
And then to say that the Lucayans didn't know anything about weapons. How can you be at war if you don't have no weapons?
Right,
it's a contradictory type concept.
Right. And then remember the reason they told us they flattened their heads so that when they fight these Caribs, the flattening the head will protect them from the blow of the Carib weapons. And I was like, well, why not just stab them in the chest? I always thought that when I was young. But the reason they actually flattened their heads is twofold. And it's amazing how communities, we develop certain things and then it's kind of infused, like just totally within the fabric of your being, you know? So initially, and I got this from Dr. Grace Turner, as well as Dr. Michael Pateman, who I see as the two foremost experts on Lucayan culture. And they would tell you that they flattened their heads because they lacked beasts of burden. So they didn't have like the cow and stuff to pull the plow.
Okay, I can see in my head.
And it's something that you still see being done throughout certain communities today. They put the strap on their head and they plow the field theirself. And then, of course, it became, over time, a beauty standard. You know what I mean? Maybe it was probably something where, well, the flatter your head is, that means the man flat head super flat, that means he's a hard worker. So the girl, right, you know, so it's all these different cultural nuances that probably existed within it. But mainly is to know that the people are there. We have a cave where you could meet a cacique, sit down on the duho like a cacique. And importantly, there are artifacts that have been, I wouldn't want to say locked away, but have been kept safely in the repository at AMMC that are now on display. So you have Lucayan skulls, you have Hutia bones. And
so you actually have a Lucayan skull there?
There's a Lucayan skull there on display right now. That's my favorite artifact, because you could actually see the flattening. You could see the size of the skull, just like your tears, my sisters, but them being small people.
You could see
the person was small as well, and it was actually an adult female. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, is this a child? I said, no, that's actually an adult female. You know, they're just like, a lot of them are just very small. But, you know, size don't really matter. You know, they say small locks, cut down big tree. And for 200 years, they was cutting down that big tree at the British Army, you know? And then one thing you notice between the colonizer and those that fought against it, it usually was down to this, I guess, expansion of military technology, which was one of the primary focuses in European communities at that time, whereas other communities focused on other things, you know, producing food, producing life and all of that stuff. And so with the Kalinagos, this and their conquering, it really coincided with this huge advancement that was coming in weaponry and warfare, you know? And so, like you see several decades later, all the way across the world in South Africa, you know, when they invented that machine gun, they couldn't even touch the Zulus. But after that machine gun was invented,
it changed the whole dynamics.
Exactly. Right. And so in the case with the Kalinago, you know, they had different ships and longer range cannons that could fire out of range, you know? So if you could stand all the way somewhere and you could fire and hit them with devastating bombs, and they can't even touch you, you know, so you could see that. But when it was hand-to-hand combat,
they couldn't.
You know, and so it's something we could be proud of, you know, as I close on that aspect. You know, it's reasons we learn about things like the French Revolution. You know, it's reasons why people like Spartacus, who fought the Roman Empire, a former slave who kind of formed his own kingdom and fought until he died against slavery. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? All of us can appreciate these things as humans, no matter what your ethnicity or your background. The problem is that the most profound things happen within our communities, the indigenous American ones, the African ones. And of course, through our research in Junkin, we've now learned, and of course, meeting the Kalinago, it's now beginning to be seeing how much a lot of this has been swept under the rug. You know, and they have, for example, a national hero from St. Vincent called Satoya. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a quite complex figure, as many national heroes are. But essentially, in the final decades of these wars, the Kalinago Wars, mm-hmm. which are proverbially called the Carib Wars, mm-hmm. of which there were two, you know, similar to like the Maroon Wars in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, when I saw all this, I said, so how come everywhere Junkanoo was, they had these people fighting against Britain, fighting against Holland, all this fighting, and none of that was going on here. And then I discovered that we had a man here who actually led the charge in planning something in 1734. His name was Kwamino, and he was an Ahanta warrior. His plan was to take over the entire island of New Providence, turn it into an African kingdom, the likes of Queen Nanny, or even Shatoya, of course, when he was in his zenith in St. Vincent. You know what I mean? And his plan was to kill the governor first and then kill all the other colonists and take over the entire island. And that governor was Governor Fitzwilliam. And of course, that hill where Government House is now is named after that governor. But the story of Kwamino, and it was also published in a book last year by another author. And in the Islanders in the Stream book, he is misnomered as Quarino. Mm-hmm. But it was simply just bad handwriting on the part of Mr. Fitzwilliam. But once you see the handwriting, you realize that it's Kwamino. And with the empirical data that we have of slaves, the only African slave ships coming from the Ahanta region, we could definitely say that this man was an Ahanta warrior. And so that connects us to people like the Kalinago as well, not just because of the Junkanoo connection, but also the connection of this revolutionary spirit that was going throughout the Caribbean, starting from their first encounter with Europeans and going right up through the 18th century. Yeah.
I'm still overwhelmed of knowing that St. Vincent led a charge on canoe ship and fought against the colonizers. I'm still featuring that, and that's a movie within itself. But I want to know, go ahead, what's next for you ladies when you return home? What is the next step for you ladies?
We want to be home like now.
So much we want to do.
So many go steps, ahead.
Yeah. We wanted to. We already started some stuff anyway at home. And we want to see the change in our community, mm-hmm. In Sandy Bay itself, where I grew up, and knowing the people. And I always say, what's driving me now is the love and the experience I have growing up in my village, knowing the beauty and the wealth and of our history, and some of our people doesn't know. So my mission now as well is to educate those who doesn't know.
Nice.
However, there's going to be a little of a battle situation. For us, like we haven't got chiefs running our country, our community. So, you know, that is going to be, you know,
the next step.
Yeah.
Establish chieftains and go back appreciating the.
So basically, it's to educate, you know, our people. Mainly because we've lost. We don't have language.
Mm-hmm.
We have some aspects remaining of our cultural, you know, connection to our ancestors. But in all, we need to just revive, bring back the Cali.
I'm excited
spirit,
for you. This is some exciting times. The opportunity is endless. But I thoroughly enjoyed you coming on. I know that you had a large amount of work you need to do in a small amount of time, and that you made time, covered some time for me. But this has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. I thank you very much, Christopher, for bringing your two guests. Ladies, I enjoyed interviewing you. It's something that I think more Bahamians need to reach out and hear your story, because this story of St. Vincent is a Bahamian story also. Mm-hmm. And we need to embrace that story and embrace it into our own narrative. But anyway, I got to go. I have less than 30 seconds.
Thank you, Bahamas.
Have a wonderful day. Yes, have a wonderful day.